This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
We got a great crew in studio, by the way. John Errol.
Good morning.
John Ellsworth of the, like, colonial era Ellsworths. And you're in are you from Windsor?
No.
Because there's an Ellsworth school.
Ellsworth Homestead.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In Windsor. And then we have Mark Heiss joining us, all three gentlemen from the – now, what is the Vintage Radio – and Communications Museum, is that the full name?
Correct.
Yep. And you're the co-founder?
Yes, I am.
You guys are on the board? When you're just hangers-on, groupies.
We're all volunteers.
Yeah. And yep. The museum is now again they say it's on Pearson Lane, but isn't it Kennedy Road?
No.
It's not
across the Kennedy Road, but
oh, okay. No. All right, so I got Kennedy Road's past it. Yeah, okay. Right. So you go down Palisado in Windsor through the downtown.
Going north.
You go past the church and you take a left at that light.
Yep.
It's right over the train tracks on your right.
Right.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yep.
By the tennis. I run by it all the time.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, obviously we saw you guys in here a week ago and I wanted to, you guys are welcome anytime, first of all. The museum is, I think your museum and the Aviation Museum in Windsor Locks are two sort of like hidden gems that people don't really, not enough people know about. So, I'm glad you guys came in. I don't know who does what talking, so whoever wants to talk. And you know, Morgan Cunningham is a huge radio buff, and Mark Christopher's a huge radio buff, and I'm sort of a late to the party radio buff because I don't have the history that, you know, Morgan Cunningham has been studying this stuff, and we're winding up our 100th anniversary here. And you were in a week ago to look at our stuff to see what you're going to maybe take and put in the museum?
Yep. We took some of the old mixer boards that are now obsolete with all the new digital equipment that's going on. So, yeah.
And what do? You just put it in a, like, because you have a space, and will you take it and put it on display? Do you rotate that stuff in, or do you create a display from them?
We have a reproduction of a 1950s radio studio with the control room, and we have a whole two racks of mixer boards going way back to maybe 30s on up through the 70s. So you get to see the whole history and the development of the mixer boards.
And our studio is all wired up. So
It can be used?
Well, yes. It could be used. We don't have a transmitter, of course. You know, we're not broadcasting. But the studio is all wired up, so we could play 78s. We could play, you know, we have the Twin Techniques turntables, so we could backward cue a record and show how they used to cue them up.
How well does it work? How well does it still work?
Very well.
Very well. Yeah. We do a lot of transcription work in there, taking media off of older forms and moving it to modern forms.
Really? So. You know, either Mark or John Errol, what's in the museum that you love the most? What's your go-to?
Or
is there a specific passion for you guys?
It's easy for me. The reason I volunteer there is because I took a tour. John Ellsworth gave me a tour a dozen years ago. And at that time, they didn't have a functioning cylinder record player. I like cylinder records, not flat records, but the soup can-shaped phonograph records.
Really?
And
I don't know if I've ever seen them.
And
Edison,
so,
Edison,
yeah, Edison,
cylinders.
Edison, the Edison company made them up until 1929. You could buy records on cylinders.
Huh.
And so we've really expanded that part of the museum. And so I love talking about phonographs, crank-up phonographs, and the other thing is jukeboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how jukeboxes relate to communications, that's a debate we have all the time, but we love the machines.
Yeah.
And so when people have donated jukeboxes to us, we've taken them and fixed them up and have them on display.
How about you, John?
Primarily telephony.
What is that?
Related telephone-related equipment. We have some equipment there that was from the Hartford 1 and 2 central office in downtown Hartford when SNET was updating to solid state.
And SNET, Southern New England Telephone.
Yes.
And that's like, that was a, after the baby, after, that was a baby bell. That wasn't even my bell. That was right after the breakup.
It was, SNET was an independent telephone company. They had a connection with AT&T, but they weren't a part of AT&T.
Wait, so that you guys are focused on the radio side. You're on the communication side. So there's, I didn't know there was a bunch of like early telephone stuff.
Yes.
Like how far back do you go? I just have this image in my head of the person. It was a woman and all the images unplugging here and plugging in
so,
here.
So we have that.
It's true.
Yes.
We've got, it we've was got women. Wall phones with the crank on it and the piece that you hold to your ear. And the mouthpiece that, you know, it hangs on the wall and you have the little crank that you turn to ring.
And then yours work too?
No way. Yes. Some of them do.
Yeah, some of them do.
And that's where the term crank calls came from.
Right. No way. Yeah. I had no idea.
Give you a history of how it all developed. I started as a radio collector. And so when the museum opened in 1990, it was the Vintage Radio Museum. But the thing we didn't predict when we opened the museum was that people would donate.
Right.
Not money, stuff.
Right.
And as within the first couple of years, I was a teacher. I had a former student who was collecting old TVs. So we had a television. And then I had a gentleman from East Hartford approach us. And he said, I collected old motion picture equipment out of the big theaters. And so we added that in. And then telephone people showed up. And we started. And so we added the communications. That's why the name is so long. We added the communications to it. And we cover everything now, telegraph, teletype, telephone, television, radio, name it.
I want to get a little more into this. We need to take a break here, and we'll continue with John Errol, John Ellsworth, and Mark Heiss from the Vintage Radio and Communications Museum in Windsor, right in our backyard. And we'll talk about what hours, when it's open, and you can get a personal tour just about any time you want. We're back here with the folks from the Vintage Radio and Communications Museum in Windsor, Connecticut. John Errol, John Ellsworth, and Mark Heiss here with us. Just quickly tell people when they can go visit. When is it open?
We're open Thursdays and Fridays from 10 to 3, Saturdays from 10 to 5, and Sundays 1 to 4.
So it's like Thursday through Sunday.
Yep.
Okay. And I think it's $10 for regular adults. For seniors, it's $7, and for kids, it's $5.
Right.
And obviously, stay as long as it's open. You know, the swap meet thing. So the swap meets are where people bring their old equipment and they trade stuff?
That's a part of it. I mean, the museum is all self-funding, and it's one of our fundraisers that we do 6 times a year. And
you got one coming up when?
December 6th.
Okay.
Saturday, December 6th, 8 a.m. And we get so much stuff donated, it's more than we need. So, if it's not worth putting up on eBay, then we have it available for the swap meet. But we do get collectors and vendors from all over the Northeast to come in and they set up sell, swap, and trade. The outdoor swap meets April, June, and September are out in the parking lot and the vendors will go 3/4 of the way around the building. It's a very, very large event. The two indoors, the December 1 and the February 1, are smaller because not
you don't have the space. Yeah.
But we host it indoors.
So I'm fascinated. And the other thing we talked about, and any gentleman can chime in, that part of the way you make – so when people donate stuff, they give it to you. You can do what you want with it. So if it's a good fundraiser, if it's something you can get value somewhere else to sell it to raise money for the museum, you'll do that.
Any people donating to us, we tell them we're going to do one of three things. If it is extremely rare and historical, obviously we're going to keep it in the collection. If it is, it could be historical and rare, but we already have one. If it's a duplicate, then we'll keep the better of the two and we'll sell the other one usually on eBay if it's a higher value piece.
And you'll get, there's a lot of attention on eBay for this stuff.
Yes. Yeah. The museum for its 35 going on 36 years has been totally self-supported the whole time. There's no federal funding. There's no outside funding. One of the advantages we have, contrary to like an art museum where you got a Monet on the wall, you can't sell a one-of-a-kind Monet. We represent objects that were mass-produced. So when we get more than one or too many of a type,
right,
then we sell the extra, and that's the big piece.
Well, that's the thing that I'm interested in because, like, on the one hand, you have pieces of history, but they could also be pieces of crap. Right. Like, so, I mean, like people just give you stuff. Right. Yes. And so you have to make these decisions.
We screen
on what to keep. Like that's pretty challenging, I would imagine.
We screen it. Anybody that offers to donate, we ask them to go to our email and take pictures of what they have and send it to me. I take it and blast it out to my 88 volunteers on the list.
Wow.
And they all have expertise. Like Mark said, he's got expertise in Victrolas and jukeboxes.
Right.
So they chime in.
And John's your telephone guy.
Right. They chime in saying whether it's something valuable or not. And then based on that, I mean, we're overwhelmed with stuff at this point. So
well, that's what I was going to ask about inventory. Like, do you guys have, is there space?
No. We filled up our space. And so our challenge is when somebody says, hey, I have grandma's old, you know, Zenith console from 1940. Do you want it? We really have to think seriously about that. That's a lot of square footage to take
and
up.
We have to treat it very carefully, too, because in terms of a collectible item, it may be a piece of junk. But
I wasn't being disrespectful. I'm just saying sometimes, you know.
But to the people that are donating to us, it was grandma's old radio.
Right.
So we have to carefully let them down and respect their history with the piece, but make them realize it's not something we need because we already have three of them in the back or whatever.
The other thing is, how do you, you know, how do you manage what you display, right? Like, you must have so much stuff that's not on display that you'd like to put out there.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Lots and
lots. Do you talk regularly about how to rotate stuff, or does it stay pretty static, or how does that work?
Stays pretty static. We don't rotate a lot. It's really not necessary. One of the things that will change, like we've had many people come and the first time they visit, they take a tour with Mark and Mark highlights totally different things than I do on my tour.
Right.
So they'll come back again a few months later and they'll take a tour with me and they just enjoy.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
Do it all over again because I highlight different things at Mark.
Can they like sort of recommend who they might want or find out when they're going to be on?
They certainly could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yes. And you know, like John said, we just, I mean, there isn't like a training class for a docent, right? We just kind of talk about the things that we know about.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to go around the horn because things go very quickly on radio. And we'll have you on again. Again, December 6th is the next swap meet, and it's at on location.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Like, what, you know, I'll start with you, John Errol. Like, what made you passionate about, as you say, telephony, but I say just like telephone communications.
When I was a little kid, I would drive any installer or cable splicer nuts when I saw them in my neighborhood and start questioning them. Oh, how does this do? How does that work? And the rest is, as they say, history. As the years progressed, I got more and more interested in telephone-related artifacts. I had a very good friend in West Haven who was a telephone collector. And I went to one of the telephone shows, Telephone Collectors International, and well, that just did it for me. I was hooked on telephones, and I've been involved with same ever since.
I'm still, when you think about it, I'm still blown away. You can speak into something, and it can go over a space, and then on the other side, people can understand exactly what you said. Like, I don't ever going to be able to understand how that works. And I grew up in a rotary household, and I remember because my first, we were 599, and the two nines were a pain in the butt. I mean, we didn't have zeros, but I mean, those were the hardest ones to have. How about you, Mark? Like, what brought you to your passion for something that got phased out in 1929?
Yes. So when I was a teenager, my grandmother lived in Seymour, and she had an old horse barn behind her house. And I was cleaning her house or horse barn and moved away some things, and there was an Edison cylinder phonograph from 1905. And she said, oh, yeah, that was my dad's, so that would be my great-grandfather's wow. phonograph. And she said, oh, you know, you should take it. She said that was his pride and joy. When he bought that phonograph in 1906, it was the only phonograph in Beacon Falls, right? So people would come over the house.
Just to listen.
Just to hear a phonograph. And so I brought that home, fixed it up. There was a bunch of cylinders in terrible shape, and so I needed some cylinders that would play better, some cleaner cylinders. These were all moldy. I needed some good ones. And that got me started with the hobby, and then I bought more phonographs and more records, and that's been my passion for basically my whole life.
John Ellsworth, give me 30 seconds. Like, you're the sort of one of the fathers here. So
I was a public school teacher teaching technology education. They asked me to teach electronics, which I knew nothing about, and I had to learn fast. And I always liked antiques. We'd always go out tag sailing. So one day I found a little vacuum tube radio at a tag sale, and I bought it, and with my newfound knowledge, I fixed it, and next thing I knew, I had about 200 of them around the house. I was an avid collector. We lived in a beautiful Victorian house in New Britain at the time. They just fit perfectly, and we'd have guests over, and they were just in awe. And that's what made me realize there's
a demand to consume this stuff. Yeah. Well, we got to go, guys. You're welcome anytime. I mean, we could talk about a bunch of different stuff. I'd love to go era by era. I'd like to know, you know, the role in our wars and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of things I'd love to talk about. So maybe, you know, in the new year, we'll do it again.
Sure.
Good. Appreciate it. All right. Yeah. John Errol, John Ellsworth, and Mark Heiss, again, from the Vintage Radio and Communications Museum, and you can find them online. They're open Thursday through Sunday. It's vrcmct.org. Again, vrcmct.org.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.